It's time for Supply Chain Now Radio, sponsored by Apex Atlanta and TalentStream. Broadcasting live from the supply chain capital of the country, Atlanta, Georgia, Supply Chain Now Radio spotlights the best in all things supply chain. The people, the companies, the technologies, the best practices, and the critical issues of the day. Now, here are your hosts.
All right. Good morning. Scott Luton here with you live on Supply Chain Now Radio. Welcome to the show. Today, we are continuing our hashtag Tech Connect series, where we dial in on some of the cutting edge technologies and tech leaders that are disrupting the supply chain industry in 2019 and beyond. Like all of our series on Supply Chain Now Radio, you can find our replays on a variety of channels: iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and of course, our great friends at Business Radio X. As always, we'd love to have you subscribe so you don't miss anything. If you're listening to this replay and you want to listen to us live next time, go to supplychainnowradio.com, click on the red button, and away we go. So let's say good morning to my talented co-hosts. Good morning, Ashley Libke, Chief Visionary at Vision Media Group, LLC.
Good morning, Scott.
Glad you are here. Great to be back on the Tech Connect series. Yes. And we've got a great story lined up today.
We sure do.
So let's say hello to our guests before we kind of dive into some of the top things to know in supply chain now. So first off, Greg Workman, founder and CEO of Load Up Junk Removal Company.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me this morning.
Glad you're here, Greg. Excited about your story and your company and, of course, your appearance here on Supply Chain Radio. And Riaz Virani, the CTO behind technology innovation at Load Up. Good morning.
Good morning.
Glad you're here as well, Riaz. And we'll try not to talk too much about Braves. I know you're a Braves diehard like I am. We could have hours and hours of content focused on where the Braves are headed. But great to have you and Greg on the show today. All right, Ashley. So what is on your radar as we dive into what we typically do on each of our shows? We want to tackle some of the top things known in supply chain now.
Yeah, so technology and innovation are something that come up in everyday's conversation. On the last show, we talked a little bit about some of the inland ports and how these sort of new dynamics of networks are happening, and I think that's still something super exciting. I'm looking at having some guests on the show related to how those free market zones are created. You know, the landscape for customs brokerage is changing. There's a lot of tariff rules, and businesses are really crunched on costs. So, you know, looking at how to save money on import is going to be a big thing, and those free trade zones are coming up quite a bit. The other thing that's neat, and you all have touched on the show about drone deliveries. You know, we're always tracking that as a new paradigm and the rules that have to come with it. And so, you know, I know UPS launched a big healthcare initiative with drones, and we're going to be talking to some of our friends over there coming up and really exploring, you know, what does that mean to, you know, put a drone into the air and drop your medicine down at your front door or however they're doing it.
Right.
We'll figure it out, right?
Well, Chris, one of our co-hosts, Chris Barnes, talked about the taco drone delivery and was making everybody hungry one episode. So we'll see.
I'd like a taco drone delivery. Sounds good.
And then at the end of the show, of course, he said it was just a concept. So he was teasing with it. So we'll see where the drones go.
I might have to reach out to Uber Eats and see if they are looking at that, actually. The other thing is had an amazing time with our partners. We were a media partner over at the E-Commerce Operations Summit, and I was a speaker on a panel with ProShip, who was one of the premier sponsors, and they just really made that show fantastic with some of their contributions. But, you know, I went back in history. I helped to build some of the ProShip shipping technology solutions. What's interesting is that while the rest of the world has followed the Oracle method of, you know, taking everything to the cloud, ProShip has such massive operations with some of their retailers that they have to keep a mainframe. They need to keep these big databases housed on site. So it's kind of interesting. You know, we talk about taking things in the cloud, but there's still kind of a big black box sitting somewhere that's helping with some of the processing engines. But I'm excited to have Riaz here from Load Up because we're going to talk about some of the new technologies and the way that you get past those bandwidth efforts.
Ashley, real quick, on that E-Commerce Operations Summit, it was great to have you speak and be one of the featured guests up there. in Columbus.
Yeah, Columbus, right? Columbus, Ohio Convention Center.
That's right. We are having Michael O'Brien with the facilitators of that event. We're interviewing him Monday morning to get some of his key takeaways from the summit. So we'll have to have you on as well.
Oh, that sounds great. Yeah, I'm looking forward. That next show is going to be in Orlando, so we're looking forward to sunny Orlando. Yeah.
Fantastic. So what else have you been tracking here lately, Ashley?
Well, as I spoke about at the event, multi-carrier rate negotiations are a really important topic around logistics and, again, saving on shipping costs. Customers that have to ship product have to find ways to you know, cut costs because transportation costs are always going up and there's more freight, multimodal. So one of the things that is a big trend is going against the phenomena of single sourcing. It can be risky. And one of the big takeaways is that as we prepare for our peak season right now, it's a fact that FedEx and UPS and DHL and the USPS still can't provide the level of service that is required by these demanding consumers that like their packages delivered, you know, within a couple hours of their online order. So I think a lot of companies are really scrambling right now to find those solutions. And you know, it was neat to see Roadie over there using the crowdsource model to deliver for retailers. And that's taking off to speed up that fast two-hour or same-day delivery model. And so everybody's looking at how to inject more carriers and how to further negotiate and work with those carriers as a partner.
Roadie has been, gosh, talk about growth. Of course, our guest today with Load Up has been experiencing a ton of growth as well, but Roadie's really been a neat story to watch develop.
Yeah, they got some big money recently. So I know that the investment community has seen them, and that crowdsource model is yet proven to be very successful again.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. All right. And then we've got a webinar coming up. Is that right?
Yes. Let's see. You've got a couple webinars.
Got a ton of webinars here.
Yeah, you got a bunch of webinars. But the big thing I'm actually looking at is the Georgia Manufacturing Summit. We're, you know, it's in October, but we're already planning ahead. And I'm going to be excited to be the official photographer for the summit. And then the webinar with Multichannel Merchant is going to be coming up. There's some regulatory issues. Thank you. Fix my mic here. There's some regulatory issues around the Supreme Court and what Wayfair has brought to the table there with some new legislation. So our friends at Multichannel Merchant will be exploring that, and you can check out multichannelmerchant.com to sign up for the webinar.
Fantastic. Yeah, we love our webinars. And of course, webinars are not silver bullets. They've been around for a while, but it's really neat to kind of pair the audio with a visual. We've been doing webinars on Supply Chain Now Radio for about 5 years, and it seems like June is going to be our procurement month. We've got a couple of webinars on procurement best practices, and I think it reflects, from what we've seen at least, a heightened focus on negotiating and evaluating your suppliers and, you know, your procurement practices, basically, right? No one wants to leave money on the table, unlike it seems like ever before. So we look to, you know, serve that need and get as many best practices out there as we can.
So just to remind everybody, you can go to supplychainnowradio.com and fill out the email subscription, and that way you'll never miss one of the webinars. And then the webinars are also available if you're subscribed to the podcast, right, Scott?
That's right. Available. Of course, we do them live, and there's so much value there live, and especially in the Q&A we wrap up each webinar on. We had a couple of folks from Accenture talk about drones and IoT developments last week. Last Friday did a great job and got a lot of great questions. And, you know, we try to nothing wrong with canned webinars, but we like to, you know, bring the experts to the market so that folks can actually pose that question and get some insight on what's important to them. So supplychainnowradio.com is where you can sign up on all those webinars we're producing. And trade shows, lots of trade shows. I think we're in a trade show season. So Ashley mentioned the Georgia Manufacturing Summit, which takes place in October, I think the 8th. We'll get Malcolm on the research team on that, but I believe that's October 8th. Is that right?
I think so, yeah.
Yep. But before we get to fall and football weather, we are proud media partners of the EFT 3PL and Supply Chain Summit. And that in here in Atlanta, June 10th through the 12th. We are broadcasting live from this Dynamite Supply Chain Trade Show on the 11th and 12th of June. And we're sponsored by our friends over at Becker Logistics, which is a rapidly growing freight forwarding organization. You can check them out at beckerlogistics.com. And if you're interested in kind of getting your message out there differently at a trade show or via podcast or webinars for that matter, you give us a shout at Scott, S-C-O-T-T, at supplychainnowradio.com, and we will have that conversation for sure. We're all about getting the word out for great companies and great supply chain leaders.
Yeah, we're looking for stories. Reach out to us, and everybody's got a story to tell. It's super exciting to see growing businesses, businesses taking on new models and challenges, and going international too. So bring it.
And if you want to just come on and talk about the Braves, we'll do that too, right, Riaz?
Absolutely.
So on that note, Ashley, let's dive into our featured guest today.
Great. Well, I'm really excited to welcome the executive team, C-Level, from Load Up. They're right here by the battery. They could probably watch a game from their office. And
that's right.
We're going to start with Greg Workman. He's the CEO and founder of Load Up, and they're a nationwide company that has innovated the removal of big, bulky items and junk from consumers and businesses. And they have a crowdsource solution that has helped them to really disrupt what was a really old industry. I didn't know much about this, but it's really interesting. So welcome, Greg.
Yeah, thank you. I mean, just to kind of set the stage about what we do at Load Up, you're talking about a really old industry. The big players in this space have been around since the 80s and have formed into these large franchise companies, and they haven't really adopted any new ways of doing things. And where we come in at Load Up is we've really enabled a crowdsourced model to level the playing field for the consumer as well as businesses that need to leverage the removal of large items.
Like in the old days, it was probably just tribal warfare. Like, we'll just take your stuff. But anyway.
The Vikings.
Yeah. So what makes Load Up different? Because there's a couple different ways of, I think, if you have something like a sofa or mattress, there's a couple ways to go about that. And so what makes you guys different in terms of the other type of companies? I mentioned crowdsourcing.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, so we have a tech stack and proprietary software that has basically Uberized the junk removal space. And while we do junk removal, we are truly a tech company behind the scenes. And really what we've done is we've carved out a niche within the junk removal space. When we talk about these large companies and all the fragmented players out in the industry, they're looking for these big jobs that are like whole home cleanouts. But that leaves an opportunity in the space that we recognized where there's a 10 items or less market. You have a lot of these millennials out today that, they're moving apartment to apartment, city to city. They don't have a whole home clean out. They've got one or two items that are really bulky. Take a mattress or a couch, for instance. And they don't really have a way to get rid of it because they don't own a truck or some other means of getting rid of the item. And that's really where we come in. We've put together a network of drivers through our tech platform, and we couple those drivers with the folks that need to get rid of these items.
So how do folks find you as far as consumers? They go to your website. Describe the process for me. I've got a couple things in my basement I can think of.
Absolutely. Yeah. So when we started the company, we did everything through organic search online. So if you go to a Google search or go into Bing and you type in mattress removal, couch removal in your local city, there's a pretty good chance that you're going to find us on the first page of Google. So that's how most consumers find out about us.
Great. And then to go through the process, I think what makes you different is how your tech interface, describe the process for me as a consumer. What makes it more appealing for your customers?
Sure. So, I mean, we are the only company that I know of in this space that provides an honest upfront quote online. And it's not just a quote. It's a guaranteed price. As long as you're giving us accurate information on the front end, we guarantee the price. So there's no haggling of any type. And it's typically 20 to 30% cheaper than any other licensed or insured company.
Well, we like that. We want to save money and we want to get our rooms clean. I've been tracking the, I think it's Marie Mongan Tidy Up
right,
through Netflix. And And I know, Scott, because I've seen your home videos, that you guys have done some massive cleanup efforts. Mm. And it's amazing to take over a space and get back to that sort of minimalism. Or I was thinking about the different times, you know, either you've got the empty nesters that are going to take over their high schooler's room and do something new with it. They might have that old mattress to get rid of or something. And maybe you get the new baby coming, so you got to turn the office into a nursery or whatever. But you got old exercise equipment or whatever. So I can see, you know, a big need for that. Tell me about the haulers and how do you build your network? How can I feel secure about that?
Sure. Yeah. So we're pretty stringent on our haulers. A lot of the guys that do pickups for us, they're licensed in their locality. They have insurance on their own. And we do a full background check on every single one of our providers. Can't really reveal how exactly we find these providers because I don't want to give away too much. But we do a pretty good job of you know, making sure that anybody that's doing a pickup for us, safety is the top priority, especially for our consumers. We're not going to send somebody into the home that is not qualified to do the job.
That's great. So your haulers can have trucks of probably all different dimensions and varieties. What kind of breadth of service can you guys provide?
Sure. Yeah. So, I mean, it is a little bit of a hodgepodge of what type of trucks are out on the road. And we try to match jobs that are of a certain size with the appropriate truck type. So you get guys with a nice box truck that's 24 foot or 16 foot, all the way down to somebody who has a pickup truck and a trailer.
That's great. I'm just thinking, Scott, about all these folks in supply chain that just started. I know so many of them that either are ex-UPS or come from the logistics industry, and they're wanting to be entrepreneurs and starting their own thing. And so, you know, what's neat is if you have a truck and let's say you've got 6 hours of extra capacity per week, you might be able to fit in a couple of these pickups. And so it's really neat. You can just, you know, go online, sign up, and you know, start serving your area, which maybe I'm sure there's some areas of the country that are highly underserved that basically don't have anybody to do this kind of thing.
Well, speaking of that, I mean, y'all are in over 170 U.S. cities.
Mm-hmm, that's correct.
Holy cow.
Yeah.
And what can y'all share any geographic, like what's next? Have you targeted a certain area to expand into? Can you share anything there?
Well, yeah. So, I mean, we've tackled any major metro area. We're already there, and we're in any of the suburbs, surrounding cities. Really, when we look at where we go next, our goal is to provide value to end consumers, but also to our retail e-commerce clients that utilize us a lot. And where they really struggle is in these really rural markets. Mm-hmm. Where it's extremely difficult to find somebody who's qualified to do this kind of work. So that's the next step for us, is to get really, really rural with how and where we provide the service. And then international would be next. We really want to cross the border into Canada in the next year.
How do you think the Uberized or the crowdsourcing model why is that so successful for you guys? I think, you know, it's been successful for other companies in other industries. Why is it successful for you guys?
Sure. I mean, for this type of industry, you look at it and most people don't need this service every year. It's a once in, you know, 5 to 10 years, right? So there's not a ton of jobs out there when you look at, say, Uber that has millions of rides happening every single day. What it's allowed us to do, being tech-enabled and crowdsourcing, is it's allowed us to grow extremely fast from a coverage standpoint. Because there's not an overload of jobs coming through on the network, we're able to leverage the available capacity that's out there in the field and grow into these cities where we don't need the density to be able to survive in the city. Mm-hmm. So we've been able to get a really, really large geographic map for our business customers that need this type of single source solution where they don't want to have to go track down a million different people.
Mm-hmm. While driving the cost down.
Exactly.
That's one of the things I know with Well, I'm partial to Lyft. Sorry, Uber, but
yeah, that's a really good point.
It does save
me
some money because, you know, it's just the different rates and whatnot.
So. Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, thank you for mentioning that. I almost missed it. The 20 to 30% cost savings is really
big.
A huge thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I love the fact that you're also helping people to get work and opportunity. As you grow, you're enabling this network and, you know, just keeping folks busy all across the country. So that's awesome. Tell us a little bit to back up about your retail solution. Mm-hmm. So you're doing what kind of work for what type of retailers?
Yeah, so we found a really great niche. And when our company was started, it really started around the time that the mattress industry started to transform and go online. You look at a lot of these bigger mattress companies that sell exclusively online, just to name a few, Avocado, Lowell, and Puffy are some really great clients of ours that want to provide a better customer experience, especially on the back end of their supply chain. There's a lot going on their delivery side, but what these guys do is they provide a 100-night guarantee on every mattress that they sell. Mm. And if you as a consumer don't want the mattress within 100 nights, they are saying that they're going to have someone come pick it up. It's completely risk-free, and you'll get your money back on your mattress. Well, that's created an opportunity for us to really step in because there hasn't really been a solution because nobody wants to really mess with a mattress. There's not a whole lot that you can do with it. You can't resell them because it's illegal in most states. So we have crafted a solution where we have this national coverage, and it's 20 to 30% cheaper than all of our competitors out in the nation. We are able to do it cheaper. We're able to do it better. We provide a great customer experience for our retail clients.
And we know from the e-com summit and all the research that returns policy, that post-sale procedure that you have with your customer is so important actually to whether or not you're going to convert a sale. Mm. And a lot of companies realize the successful ones are putting that return policy front and center right on the homepage. Very clear. It says 100 night trial. And so it's, you know, part of their brand, part of their sales. And I think that's creating a competitive nature where they're probably going to line up there that, you know, many mattress companies probably have that similar problem. I'm seeing the lengthier returns policies being driven by, you know, Amazon's got an A to Z guarantee. Google has a Google promise. And so people are trying to keep up with the big boys.
Mm-hmm. I love how you view yourselves as a technology company. That's a huge. I love the niche you're in, but also exploiting that with technology and making it as convenient as possible for the consumers that have that need. You know, because to your point, you know, click and connect is a term I've been learning a lot more about. Where you want to make it really that simple to for folks to get rid of what they want to get rid of. Mm-hmm. So it's fascinating. And I'm still wrapping my head around the 170-plus cities across the country. So do we want to shift gears and kind of learn more from a technology standpoint or not quite yet?
Yeah, no, I just had one last question for Greg, which was really related to leadership and something that we talk about, the evolution of a business owner when you're an entrepreneur. You know, Scott, we both have started many companies, and I wanted to ask Greg about how he kind of first got into this, if we back up to the beginning, because this was not his first company, and I wanted to know what you learned from those other startups that you had.
Yeah, so I started a couple of companies prior to this. There were long, bloody roads that There was not much fun in those, but I took away some really, really valuable lessons from those early businesses. Probably the biggest thing that I learned was that you don't have to get venture capital funding to really be successful. When I started out with Load Up, it wasn't called Load Up. It was actually called AtlantaMattressDisposal.com. And we just did it right here in Atlanta. And it was kind of the redheaded stepchild of all the companies that I had started. I really didn't think much of it. I thought of it as just supplemental income on the weekends. And I was working a full-time job for somebody else and just kind of started it on the side. And really,
here
just,
we are.
We bootstrapped it all the way to this point. Didn't take any outside money, and I had started two other companies where I took on money, and they failed. So,
can we dive into that right there?
Yeah, sure.
There's one thing that, look, I don't want to step on toes. There's lots of great funds out there that are helping make entrepreneurial ventures happen, right? Mm. And that's a critical part of the market, but. It's like in some of what I'm hearing and reading and seeing, it's like we are encouraging people that there's only one way to do it, and that is to go out and make these pitches and, you know, raise all these funds. And hey, that works for a lot of people. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, there's so many great bootstrapping stories where, to your point exactly, you build the model, You know, some things work, some things don't work. And you can do it without, you know, accepting the funds and a lot of the stipulations and some of these other weird aspects of these deals. You don't necessarily need that, you know. And I think,
because free money isn't free.
Free money is not free. It's right, but it's also, not. You know, not to get on soapbox too much, but it's like we beat down the natural entrepreneurial essence, mm-hmm. right? When we make it so much around getting it funded. So that's one of the aspects of y'all's story that really resonates with me.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, nothing against getting money. You know, people make it work for them.
That's right.
But I think it's one of the best things we've done is not take outside money, just because we've been able to have freedom. And you really can't put a price on being able to do what you want to do with the business. And I know Riaz here has seen it firsthand that we don't have to answer to investors, so we're allowed to do whatever it is we want to do. And we can pivot quickly and be fluid.
Yeah, so the power to be nimble in an innovative company. I think that's super important. I've seen some really awesome tech companies that bring something completely innovative that nobody else is doing and have done it with, you know, minimal funds. It's great to see. And let's turn the conversation to the technology behind this successful business. And welcome Riaz. He's the Chief Technology Officer of Lone
Hello.
Up. Hi. Thank you for joining us today. So tell us about the early requirements of LoadUp. It's web-based, but technology as far as web-based applications has changed. So give us a little background on what you provide.
Yeah, so I'd say the first couple of years that I was involved with the company, it was really about staying nimble, because the worst thing you can do is have an idea of, well, here's how the business should work, and therefore here's how the technology should work, and then lock yourself in. It's just never true, especially because the niche we're in is not really one that's been trodden before. We're trying to disrupt an industry that you know works a certain way. Mm. So,
are you talking about those 12 to 18 month build plans?
yeah, exactly. And so, you know, from the very start, we said, okay, well, what are the things we need? And we kind of drew upon, you know, I'd worked as a contractor helping a lot of companies build MVPs. We had other people on the team doing the same thing and said, you know, Greg was really good about saying, I'm not going to dictate to you. You tell me, like, you understand my business and the technology I need and help me solve this problem. So we had a lot of free rein to build it the way that we thought, how can we avoid the mistakes we've seen? So a couple of things that we did, one was, while we try to build our technology in-house to stay nimble, underneath that, we actually use a lot of standardized technology. So we use a framework called Ruby on Rails that's actually less common, I'd say, in the logistics space. Mm. But it's very common among like West Coast startups, because it's really designed for fast prototyping. It gives you a lot of convention so you can build things quickly. We chose really early on to actually not do what's called our own DevOps. Mm. And DevOps is sort of, you know, the term to describe how do you manage your servers, your infrastructure, how do you do deployments. So we jumped on to a platform as a service that kind of handles that for us. Now, when you're at really large levels of scale, it gets very expensive. But the number of companies I've seen where the developer's like, well, I'm going to do it myself. And then, you know, they don't realize it, but they're spending a third of their time managing that. And that's materially affecting the business because they can't deliver.
Are you talking about what they're also calling like hybrid IPaaS data platform as a service? It brings together the data, the servers, the applications, and everything sort of all together.
Yeah, I've never heard that term, but that might be what you're referring to. Mm. So one of the bigger players in that space is a company called Heroku, owned by Salesforce. And again, it's very commonly used for early stage startups, less common for large companies that are going to be using, you know, technologies like Docker, Kubernetes to manage you know, in a different way, but they had more control. Mm-hmm. And so we said, okay, no, let's make our technology fit the standard mold, because what we want to stay focused on is how do we actually build the stuff that's going to let people make orders? How are they going to actually fulfill the orders? And so I'd say like that was really the focus over until the last year. And coinciding with that, how do we make choices that prevent what's called technical debt? So we don't want to just sort of slosh around and make lazy stuff that's really quick, but then we can't change it, you know, and it crashes and it dies. So we thought like really, really heavily about those things, about, you know, what is the thing that's caused companies and our own projects to fail? I mean, we failed every which way that we could possibly fail. So, and then last year, the switch was really over to, well, the company's growing, you know, we have to shift our focus. And then the kind of word really became integration. And so one of the things we found was there are companies out there that as they grow, they feel like, well, we don't have competence in this area, but they do feel like it's a core competency they should have. And so they rely upon an outside tool, which can sometimes work out. But I'd argue that if it's really part of the core part of making your business work, you need to acquire that. And the cost of having integrations across disparate systems is the bane of this industry, right? You know, the sort of effort of, well, you got this sort of quick capability, but then to get, and if you had a change in requirements, does your API interaction between those systems support that? And all of the glue you have to add. And so...
So talk more about that. Why is it, you call it the bane of the industry? Is it just because of lack of effective integration between all these different platforms? Why is it the bane?
I think it's integrations are hard. The integrations are always going to be devised towards how we think people are going to use it if you're an engineer, right? And then the reality is the more people you support, the more complicated your interface has to be. So there's companies that can do a really good job of that at really large scale. For example, you know, I'd say another Atlanta company, MailChimp, they focus on just email marketing. Mm-hmm. Their API is fantastic. If you talk to a developer, you know, it's fully fleshed out. They do a really good job of supporting people who want to integrate to their platform. But they spend a lot of time and money on it, right? So
it's not just the app now. It's actually their app store and all the pre-programmed apps. And the app you choose, it may depend on the other apps that are functioning with it. Yeah, we see a lot of that.
Right. So I think for us, it was just to be careful. And for the things that are core things like dispatching, taking in orders, you know, all even reporting and analytics, we said, let's integrate. Let's continue to integrate that. That's actually paid off dividends for us, where the things that really matter, where we want to make changes quickly, having them in-house in one system has made us really agile, where I know for a fact that been in other places and we get a requirement or a request and we'd say, okay, we need a month or two. And we've often delivered things within a week. You know, sometimes Greg will have an idea and it'll be stable and live within a week. But there's bounds around that because he wants something that's kind of outside that core competency, it takes us longer to acquire it. So deciding what is your core competency and integrating that versus what you think is more standardized and outsourcing that is a really core technical decision for really any startup, especially at our level of scale, because we're sort of mid-size now. We're not like a billion-dollar company, but we're not a startup.
So how do you consider your approach in terms of meeting the needs of not just consumers who you now have to think about millennials and older people and you probably have, I think, a niche of age, but you then also have retailers and businesses that you're dealing with and haulers. So how do you approach the user interface designer? Is it just make it easy?
Yeah. So my approach may be a little bit unique. You know, we actually don't have designers in-house. We have people that can kind of build stuff and make it look elegant. I try to drive almost everything from what we're actually hearing from the front lines. So, you know, I don't need to know ahead of time that this is going to be confusing or hard or easy. You know, if we're building tools for our internal dispatchers, we come up with a guess, make a preview, and then we show it to them half-baked. And we just let them tell us, well, can you put this here? Can you move that there? Like the people that are going to use it. When we do things with our partners, we have to have some idea and launch it. But like we're always talking to them and they always come back with feedback of like, well, yeah, but I can't find this here. Like I click there, but I can't see this. And use that to drive your requirements, right? Like if you're thinking in a lean way, like what's the quickest way to get a customer experience? And once you've actually got customers on board, drive everything from unless it's from a business profit motive, from what the customers are saying. So, you know, we had one of the earlier things when we launched a separate partner portal, which is what we call for our retail partners. Mm-hmm. We gave them a separate portal because they said, well, the retail one that everyone else uses doesn't have these other power search, and they want to look through the history and all that stuff that consumers don't care about. When we launched that, the very first time we did it, we had this idea of how the order form should look. And within days, we realized that we kind of gotten off. Like, you couldn't tell by looking at it, but like when they were trying to use it, they kept reporting the same problem. And so within days, we made a change, right? Now, we didn't have to kind of go back and do a three-month plan. Just like, you know, be really good at listing, right? Mm-hmm. As soon as you get feedback that's real, always prioritize it over your own intuition.
So, Riaz, kind of a more broader point that you're making. So we were at Blueprint 2019 yesterday, put on by the great folks over at Blue Ridge. And we were having a conversation around e-commerce, and the conversation kind of shifted to why some of the big established players can't figure out a successful e-commerce strategy. But you know, at its core, going back to the voice of the customer and listening, right? There are companies out there, we're not naming any names, but they refuse to listen to what modern-day e-commerce consumer demands are telling them.
Yeah.
And, you know, we just had a recent experience. You know, we got a gift from a family member, and we had an in-store pickup. And you didn't get what we were supposed to get. And then we had to go back. And you know, we're trying to avoid, you know, it's voice of the customer, convenience. But some of these established players aren't following your advice.
Yeah, and I think it's something that's probably generalized to all business, and there's always a thing where if you're going to be an entrepreneur, you're going to be in business, whatever, you have an idea of what you think you should do, and it's really hard to then realize, oh, you're wrong. So
that's true.
I think that's actually been for me one of the things that you know, areas we worked really well is because we, you know, are in one office space. You know, we keep a pretty tight relationship between the teams, and we try to keep it really, really open. So there's not much hierarchy. Anyone can walk into Greg's office. We have, you know, probably every other day, someone from the customer service dispatch team walks into the engineering room and says, hey, like, we're having, this is kind of funny, or can you add this here, or whatever. And those minor improvements add up, and that's, you know, not really even specific to supply chain or even our industry. But I think that, you know, it's not really making new technology. I always like to tell our other engineers, like, we're not inventing a new AI algorithm, right? Like, there's companies that do that. They're just people sitting in a room and they're coming up with a better way to classify whatever. And we need those people doing that. Our value proposition is taking existing things and stitching it together in a way it's really usable. Mm. So, like, we're only useful, like, whatever clever technical thing we make, because developers are very good at being clever and making technical gizmos no one can really use. Mm. We have to constantly be checking ourselves that it doesn't matter if we like it or not, if we can't find a use for it. Mm. And you always have to keep checking your ego, right, of, like, looking at people's actual usage. And so, yes. So when you kind of mention like what markets are we expanding into, and so, you know, our marketing team and our recruiting team for the drivers ask, can you find out what zip codes people are entering on the site? And we're saying no, because we don't have capacity. Mm. And that's the primary driver for where we look for drivers in new markets, or they look at the web traffic and where it's coming from. And so kind of as a company, always trying to focus on getting data to back our decisions.
So aside from anticipating needs, both current and future, and leveraging all this data, which I'm sure you get lots of requests more and more so for data. What kind of other things, like security, mm-hmm. fraud, server protections, consumer, what kind of is top of mind or keeps you up at night?
So I think from a growth perspective, it keeps me up at night that I think, you know, the way we approach things that works for us, it's harder to do at scale as we grow our team. We're doubling the size of our engineering team probably this year. From a security and a fraud perspective, a lot of that just comes down to, you know, we keep an iron rule, and Greg's fully on board with this, that most of those cases where things go wrong, it's if you have smart people, they know what to do, and someone pressured them to not do it, to take the shortcut, to not put in the extra time to keep a fail safe. And so, you know, I'm like absolutely stringent on that. I mean, I had a bad experience at a previous company where I almost caused a meltdown. So like this is years ago and it was early enough in my career that you realize the risk and people are trusting us with data that you think wouldn't be as important, you know, come to my house and pick up this thing. But we have all the stuff everyone else has, all the PII. Mm-hmm. And you know, no one, we We don't do any of the fancy stuff that would potentially compromise that. And a lot of it is that you get a lot of protection by staying within standardized tooling. There's the other thing that we also do that kind of helps with that is we actually dedicate for every engineer like half a day a week where their task is to work on the technical debt and filling in. Go find the gaps. Like, don't work on new features. Find the gaps where we may have missed things. It could be a usability, a technical issue, a security issue, and keep things up to date. So we're really
internal
strict about
hacking.
Yeah. We're really strict about keeping our dependencies and our libraries up to date to keep all the security stuff valid.
So if we can bring Greg back in for a second here. So Greg, when did it dawn on you? When you mentioned the initial plan was AtlantaMattressRemoval.com, I think. Did I get that right?
AtlantaMattressDisposal.com.
Okay.
Yeah, close.
So at the beginning, I'm guessing here that might have been more of a service-focused business model.
Correct.
Clearly what we are describing today, as y'all mentioned it, you're a technology company. When did that dawn on you, the need to move from service-focused to technology-focused?
Yeah, that's a great question, actually. So we did a lot of things non-tech based. We leveraged other people's technology. And what we ran into is we always got sort of this 70 to 80% fit for what we needed. And it was really hindering the business and the growth of the business. So I would say it was about 2 years ago when I first really came to Riaz, and he was working on another project at the time, and he didn't really want to do it because he was really deep into it, something else. But he helped us out and built our first ordering system that was unique and unique to the industry. So it was about 2 years ago when we first really realized that we needed to make this shift into a technology type company.
Now you're like the Amazon of junk removal industry, right?
That's the hope. Yeah. Hopefully we'll get as big as Amazon. That'd be great.
Well, I'll tell you, it's very impressive just the story thus far.
Riaz, I know you were on another podcast recently. Mm-hmm. And so what was it called? It was...
It's a technical podcast called Drifting Ruby. So it's specific to the Ruby programming language.
Yeah, it's interesting. I know some tech companies also in Austin. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of tech companies that are going in that area. And I hear Ruby Rails coming out of that west area too. So what are the roles, high demand? You know, developers are probably, I think you mentioned before, looking for kind of sexy jobs, maybe building dating apps or something. But how do you attract new talent, and, you know, what are the areas where folks can get more involved in the coding community?
Sure. I mean, I think, it's a great time to be a developer simply because there's so many opportunities. I mean, it sounds cheesy, but it is literally expanding every year. Like, software is eating the world. If you're a company trying to hire, you can tell it's really, really challenging. I think, you know, if you're in college or even after college and you're looking to switch over, the first thing I'd say is, the great thing about the industry is if you want to jump into it, you don't need a degree. I mean, if you decide in your 40s you want to become a doctor, it's a long trail to get there. But if you decide you want to be an engineer, it's just about acquiring the skill. I mean, if you get the interview, companies are starved. They'll just test you. You know, we the main way that we evaluate people is not on years of experience, and most companies don't. They'll bring you in and say, all right, let's write some code, right? And if you can do the work, you can do the work. So the main thing I'd say is, you know, specifically breaking in, focus on just having the knowledge versus worrying, you know, specifically about certifications, et cetera. Not to say certifications are bad. There's a few of them. But for the most part, they're going to be less valuable than just acquiring the knowledge. And so just a simple Google search will show you more resources than you can possibly imagine. The one that I really like is Udacity. And the second thing I'd say is...
Udacity?
Udacity, yeah.
Okay. I'm familiar with Audacity. .com,
yeah, which is the audiobook stuff.
Yeah.
But Udacity is Udacity. It's essentially various developers and professors have made some really, really engaging content. And there's other ones like Udemy and Coursera, of course, where you can find coursework. Mm. The other thing I'd say is, it sounds like you don't need that part, but you actually really need to get around developers. I mean, in any industry, you'll notice if you're just around people that are doing that work. In the media industry, if you're around other media people, it sort of travels by osmosis. So meetup.com is a great place to find technical groups. I run I'm actually involved in two of the bigger ones in Atlanta, the one for the React meetup, which is a Facebook framework for browsers, and the Ruby meetup, which is the technology we use on the back end. but they're super, super welcoming. And that was how I actually was really instrumental for me to transition from my very early career as sort of a manager of developers into to being a developer myself. Mm. And there's other associations like Technology Association of Georgia, et cetera. But if you just want to meet practitioners in a less formal setting and just sort of get, you know, what are developers talking about? How do they talk? Like, those are the things that'll get you more familiar and make it more comfortable to ease into the industry. Mm. And talk at them. Every meetup does monthly meetups where you can volunteer to talk. It's open. Ask to volunteer, even if you're junior. Like, do it. It's the best job interview you'll ever have.
That's great. Do you have any other events coming up? Anything on your radar that you're looking at?
Yeah, so the Ruby meetup is happening on the second Wednesday of the month, so coming up in a week and a half.
Where do y'all meet?
We meet over at we just changed venues. We meet over at Atlanta Tech Village in Buckhead.
Mm. Why don't you meet somewhere like Hattie's Hot Chicken, Hattie B's.
Yeah.
Man, I'd be there every time.
country boy.
Well, there's a great barbecue place across the street.
Yes, there is.
Yeah. So and coming up, I think the React meetup I mentioned also is having a meetup the same day that time. But yeah, if a good place to find that kind of stuff is the Hypopotamus, is a tech newsletter in Atlanta. So they have a really good calendar for those events. And there's also Startup Grind has a really good calendar. And also, if you're a technologist, Atlanta has a tech Slack group that's public called Tech 404. And you can just go Google that and sign up. And it's just, I mean, half the developers in Atlanta are in that group. So it's a great, great community there.
That's awesome, because supply chain is really driven by technology. We know that from Tech Connect, don't we?
That's right. Riaz, I'm running out of room to take more notes. You're like a walking encyclopedia. This is outstanding. Really is. And Hypotamus has been on our radar for a while. Ben Harris is also one of our co-hosts on the Supply Chain City podcast, and he's a huge fan of Hypotamus. In fact, we need to have them on the show. They do a lot of great work getting
the word
out.
Yeah.
So, Greg, if I want to be a CEO, what do I do?
Don't do it.
It's tough, isn't it? It's tough when you're the CEO. You have to wear so many hats and be a chameleon of sorts, right? Mm-hmm. That's one of the skills that comes to the table as far as what you have to deal with. Lots of different personalities, different constituencies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no.
It always stops with you.
Yeah. Being the CEO is great. It's even better when you get surrounded by really great people. And Riaz is definitely one of those people that has made my life so much easier. Just in the last, when did you join us? September? Full-time?
Yeah.
I mean, it's been night and day. Stress level has dropped dramatically. I mean, it's always there, being the CEO. It's always something keeping me up at night. But,
well, I hear he can turn the lights on with his voice.
There's an app for that.
He's got it all programmed.
An Excel macro.
Yeah. But for listeners out there that want to be a CEO, don't wait for things to be perfect. Mm. Just do it.
Love
not
that.
To steal not to steal Nike's logo or slogan there, but... yeah, I mean, you just can't wait for things to be perfect. Nothing's ever going to be perfect. You just got to jump in and do it.
Yeah, be afraid to take a risk.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's usually what they say is the probably number one attribute of a CEO is the ability to tolerate risk. Mm-hmm. So, excellent. Great
Absolutely.
Talk.
Well, you know, we could talk with y'all guys, I think, for a couple more hours, but we've got to pay some bills with some of the announcements of upcoming events. And Riaz, you've already shared lots of others as we kind of share some of these events. If there's anything else that you think our listeners, especially those with a passion for supply chain, should get out to, we'll circle back on both of y'all here shortly. But Ashley, we've got a growing calendar. So next up, one of the things we've been involved with Apex Atlanta is working with the Georgia Manufacturing Alliance, which we talked about earlier. They've got an outstanding Georgia Manufacturing Summit, which we've already got a booth at. We're going to be broadcasting live from the summit in October. Did you
know
that?
That's right. I did not know that, but I will be taking pictures, and I hope to be interviewing folks, definitely.
Late-breaking news.
I think when you get all those wonderful people in a room, it's natural that we want to record their stories and get out there and spotlight those things in supply chain here for our show. So
absolutely.
We will be there.
Yep, absolutely. And that builds on the new series we started up with GMA, Today in Manufacturing, which we've got our next edition coming up May 22nd, I believe. So anyway, May 10th, we are Apex Atlanta is joining the Georgia Manufacturing Alliance to host Bo Groover as he talks about proven techniques for continuous improvement. And that's going to be at Doosan, which I believe builds forklifts. We're going to get a tour of their site after the two-hour breakfast event, and you can find more information on that at Georgia Manufacturing Alliance.com. Upcoming APEX classes, so don't listen to Riav about certification. I'm kidding, Riav. Certifications are, you know, I like how you put it, you know, doing it and learning it, you know, kind of the school of hard knocks.
Real learning.
Yeah, real learning. Real, that has a huge value
in
that.
You can take the class, skip the test, and still,
there you go.
And still kill it.
Well, so upcoming APEX classes at the Georgia Tech Supply Chain Logistics Institute the week of June 24th. We've got our CSCP boot camp and our CLTD boot camp, which are two widely regarded, highly regarded supply chain management certifications. I've gone through the CSCP process, and a great body of knowledge based on, been around almost, well, the body of knowledge has been around almost 60 years. The CSCP certification through APEX, and now, which is now the ASCM, has been around probably for about 15 years or so. But you can learn more at scl.gatech.edu. Here, just around the corner, next week, the Association for Manufacturing Excellence will be holding its Atlanta 2019 Lean Summit. Great speakers, best practice sharing, networking, all really dialed in on the world of manufacturing. We are excited to serve as a media partner, and we're going to be broadcasting live from day one that the networking reception they're having. We need more. They're going to sell out, but most folks are traveling into Atlanta for that event versus Georgia manufacturers. So there's still time, not much time, but you can learn more at AME.org.
And that's really exciting because Georgia, you know, for the fifth year in a row is just attracting so much business. Mm. And we're having manufacturers who are growing our economy here in the state, but also starting to export internationally. So how great is that for our economy?
Love it. Love it. In fact, you know, if you look at the first quarter numbers, which came in at 3.2% economic growth, which was much higher than some economists were projecting, 2%. So it blew the doors off, and one of, to your point, one of the factors, and I am not pretending to be an economist, but exports were much higher than expected, and imports were much lower than expected. So we'll see how that plays out the rest of the year. But
we're moving in the right direction.
I hope so. We all need good news, you know, regardless of the policies. But hopefully that continues. That's good for everybody. We've already talked about the EFT 3PL and Supply Chain Summit. I do want to give one more shout out to our sponsors for that. We're going to be broadcasting live those 2 days of that event. They're expecting over a thousand supply chain executives, really an event geared towards those senior levels, kind of like Greg and Riav here, you know, the guys and gals making decisions up at the top. So a big shout out to Becker Logistics, beckerlogistics.com, who's sponsoring that broadcast. We are currently lining up guests. So if you're interested in being interviewed at that conference, let us know. There's still time to register. You can check them out at EFT.com, which stands for I for Transport, London-based organization to do trade shows throughout the world. And if you can't find what you're looking for, any of this stuff, you can shoot us a note to scott@supplychainnowradio.com, and we'll make it easy, right? Click and connect. Is that the phrase we're after here? We're trying
click
to make
and connect
it.
Connect and listen to Tech Connect.
There we go. We got, yeah, there's a jingle there somewhere. Let's thank again, Asha. What a great story and exploding business model with Greg Workman, founder and CEO of Load Up Junk Removal Company. And you can find out more information, I think, at goloadup.com, right?
That's right.
Yep. Goloadup.com. We got to get you on Twitter, though.
They're also on Facebook.
Twitter. They're on Facebook, Instagram, everywhere else. Maybe even at Hattie B's at one of these upcoming events. Hattie B's, they get lots
of
stuff.
You've got a craving.
They are an incredible restaurant. All right. So, but also thanks to Riaz Virani, the CTO behind all the technology innovation at LoadUp, which is a true technology company. I love kind of that shift y'all made a couple of years ago. I think it's fascinating. Ashley, what did we miss today? What other upcoming events are on your radar or any other announcements you have?
You know, I am watching what's going to be happening at the Internet Retailer Convention in Chicago. Mm. Nobody has invited me or offered to pay for my plane ticket, but you can email me about that, and I'll make sure we come interview you for the show. But, no, I've got a lot of partners and folks in the industry that we're tracking for things that they're going to be doing up there, and always look for some new trends. And you might laugh, but I'm helping some clients get through the Bronner Brothers show, which is just all about that wonderful hair care and all kinds of beauty accessories.
It's a huge industry. Yeah.
The Bronner Brothers are legendary, and I'll be involved in that show this summer.
And if you haven't checked it on Netflix, check out Good Hair by Chris Rock. That is a fascinating movie that speaks to the industry, right?
And P. Diddy's Barbershop. I'm getting all the lowdown on lots of new trends with actually technology around hair and hair loss and things. So we're, you know, we're getting out there.
Yeah, fantastic. Fantastic. So we are going to be back at an elementary school at Unity Grove Elementary doing Supply Chain 101 with third graders tomorrow and Thursday. We're doing six classes, and that's about 150 third graders. So if y'all see me speaking here, if y'all see me late this week with no hair, it's from that. But kidding aside, it's very rewarding. We're there just to plant seeds of awareness around supply chain and really the end-to-end supply chain, so manufacturing and production and transportation. That'll be a neat event, and we've got probably about 20 volunteers. We appreciate them because that's a big part of the program, getting them to come out and be positive. You know, encouragers at these events, making sure these third graders know that it's good to be heard and their opinions are valuable. That's a big part of the program.
I think it's great you guys expose those children to something new that they might not have been exposed to. I remember when I was in elementary school, I got to take Latin, law, and marketing, and it served me well for the next couple decades. Mm. So. Neat stuff.
You know, we try to do our part. I hope we'll have
Did
a lasting.
Did you know they taught that in elementary school?
No, I didn't. I had no idea. You know, I hope we have a lasting impact. But you know, what we have seen is just kind of as we define things and we talk about the lemonade supply chain and we see these little eureka moments early on because these kids are just fascinated. They learn so fast, but then they start to connect the dots, and then they're giving us consulting advice about supply chain. It really is just such an interesting program. But if you're interested, shoot us a note. We'll get you involved at this week's or ones down the road. All right. So, again, thanks to Greg and Riaz with Load Up. Great story. Want to have y'all back as your business continues to expand coast to coast and Canada, as you mentioned, to talk more about lessons learned. I love Greg's advice. Don't wait on it to be perfect. Jump right in. Yeah, just do it. It's still a Nikeism, but that is so – it resonates. It really resonates. So many people wait until everything is just – the stars have lined up, but y'all have clearly jumped right in and made it happen. So,
and being gracious, too, when you're with your coworkers and your people above and under you. It's if we're going to take that mentality that it's okay to not be perfect, then we got to be a little bit flexible in terms of just offering feedback and understanding that things aren't perfect, people aren't perfect, but we try hard.
Yep, absolutely, absolutely. So as we close here, any other events? I want to give y'all one last chance. Any other? Events coming up. I mean, y'all, not like you don't have enough on your plate. So y'all got a lot of stuff going on.
It's all happening at goloadup.com.
That's right. Definitely. That's the best place to be. All right. So big thanks to our sponsors, Apex Atlanta and Talent Stream. We love on those folks. Yesterday it was made clear all that we probably had seven or eight different interviews with supply chain leaders. And one of the key takeaways was you've got to have the talent in this era to really, run your progressive supply chain, right? And so, of course, Talent Stream, one of the things they do, and we don't talk about them enough, but they specialize in the talent space from the engineering, manufacturing, and supply chain space. So if you need help finding that talent to build your business, reach out to talentstreamstaffing.com. Okay, so be sure to check out other upcoming events, replays or interviews, other resources at supplychainnowradio.com. You can find us on iTunes, SoundCloud, all the other leading sites where podcasts can be found. I was told a new one earlier this morning we're going to explore, and Robin, who's not mic'd up, CastBox, I believe. We're going to explore that. Maybe that's our seventh or eighth channel. But be sure to subscribe so you don't miss anything. On behalf of Ashley Libke, Vision Media Group, and our host for the Tech Connect series here on Supply Chain Now Radio, on behalf of Talent Stream, Apex Atlanta, the entire Supply Chain Radio team, this is Scott Luton wishing you a wonderful day. It's beautiful here in Atlanta, Georgia, and we'll see you next time on Supply Chain Radio. Mm-hmm.